Good evening. We are going to call it evening because it's winter time and it's almost dark outside. And I am looking forward to sun. I am thankful for our song leaders always. And it's funny that Steve had kind of said that this was good to go with part two. At first I thought he said Eric's cartoon. And I was like, what? Part two, yes. If you were here this morning, then we talked about sin and its consequences. We talked about a handful of passages that help us to understand what sin is. Sin is lawlessness. Sin is unrighteousness. Sin is violating our convictions, as we saw from Romans 4:14 and verse 23. And James chapter 4, verse 17 was another passage that we had used to talk about sins of omission, knowing the right thing to do and refusing to do it. Sin is egregious, and it's an offense against God. And in part two tonight, we're just going to focus on one basic idea. Sin is awful. Sin is awful. There is a deadly danger facing us, which we often handle with much less caution than we would use in approaching a grizzly bear. And it is sin. Sin is no teddy bear. It is deadly, and it is awful. And to establish that point, our key text tonight is Numbers 32, verse 23. Numbers 32, verse 23 says, "But if you will not do so, behold, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out." Now, this is such an important passage tonight. This is our slideshow. This is it. I usually do about five or six slides. Nope. Tonight, one verse, one slide. And it's going to be right in front of us. And Steve, I know you love the text here. All caps and underline and bold. So we can get it through our heads. Sin is awful. And it will find us out. Sin is deadly and it is awful. Do you believe that? Do you believe that sin is deadly and awful? Sin is more dangerous than an angry lion. Would you put yourself within reach of a deadly lion? It is more deadly than a rattlesnake. Would you lay down in a coffin full of rattlesnakes? It is more destructive. Maybe this will hit a note with us since of recent events. It is more destructive than a tornado. Yet millions of people take sin lightly. They get within reach of the lion. They invite the storm into their life. They lay down with the snake. We have grown accustomed to the appearance of sin, and we don't see it for what it is. We don't hate its ugliness. It is said of Satan that he can disguise himself, he can veil himself as an angel of light. And you better believe he can do that with sin too. He will take a horrible, rotting carcass and make it appealing to us. That's how deceptive he is. But sin is no pet, and it is not to be petted. It will certainly bring death to its victim. Be sure your sin will find you out. Now, Numbers 32 is talking about a very specific situation, so I'll give you a little background on that before we move forward. Numbers 32 is dealing with, they are just about to cross the Jordan and take the land in the book of Joshua. Deuteronomy is basically this collection of sermons that Moses gives right before they cross the Jordan. Moses is about to die. Deuteronomy is basically a book of last-minute sermons. So we're at the end of Numbers here. And Reuben and Gad, and what will end up happening is part of Manasseh will go there too, they want to settle in the Transjordan area. So rather than cross into the Jordan and receive part of that as an allotment, they want to settle on the far side of the Jordan. And Moses doesn't take to this very kindly in Numbers 32. He says, "You are just like your fathers. Your fathers were stubborn and disobedient." And he's pretty strong with them. He calls them a brood of sinful men that have taken their father's place. He doesn't pull any punches with them. But Reuben and Gad promise that they will not abandon their brothers, and that when Israel is going to take the land, they will go with them, but they want their wives and their livestock to settle in the Transjordan area. And then after they help purge the land, they will go and they will settle with their wives and their livestock. They promise to do this. And this is what Moses is saying. It's in the context of this. Moses is saying, if you don't keep your word, your sin will find you out and you will be destroyed because of it. So that's a little bit of background about that. But we're focusing again on this idea that sin is awful. But you know what? Sin is appealing. Otherwise, we wouldn't do it, right? Sin is appealing. Regardless of its appeal, though, there is not a single kind of sin that does not bring ruin and damnation to the soul. Just as certain as God, sin will bring judgment to its followers. And we're going to look at a few passages this afternoon or this evening as we contemplate this idea. And I want to encourage you to start turning to the book of the poetic books in the Old Testament, Psalms, Psalm 140. There's this refrain in the poetic books about sin and what sin does. It uses a great metaphor. Sin is like a trap that springs back on the person who laid it. We're going to look at a few concepts, though, that kind of explore a variety of different illustrations of this. And Psalm 140, in verse 11, may a slanderer not be established in the earth. May evil hunt the violent man speedily. Sin is depicted as being a hunter that sneaks and follows you, that stalks you, and is ready to pounce on you and kill you. In Proverbs chapter 5 and verse 22, it says, his own iniquities will capture the wicked, and he will be held with the cords of his sin. Sin has the ability to hunt down, overthrow, and ensnare us with cords, and it will bring us to judgment. The sinner may run hard away from their sins, but they can never outrun the rewards and the wages of their sins. Sin will eventually overtake us by our own selves. So again, look at this text, Numbers 32, verse 23. It does not say that others will find you out. That may or may not be true. You may be able to hide your sin for a long, long time. You may hide it from your spouse. You may hide it from a friend. Chances are the cat will come out of the bag. But you may be successful in hiding that for your entire life. It may or may not be that others will find us out. The verse also does not say that God will find you out, although he will, of course. He sees all things. All things are laid bare before his eyes. He brings into judgment every act, every thought, and inclination of our heart. The passage does not say you will find yourself out. And that's true. What the passage does say is be sure your sin will find you out. Sin itself will hunt you down and it will destroy you. Because that's what sin is. It is a destroyer. And it will eviscerate you. You'll be fully aware of its existence and its consequences. It has the power to ruin and destroy. You may try to bury it. You may try to cover it up. You may try to deny it or ignore it. It will still come back to find you and condemn you. For the wages of sin is death. It will find you. Sin is deadly, and it is awful. Let's talk a little bit more about the awfulness of sin. Sin is awful because it is against God. Remember what we said this morning in our lesson? Anytime you have a word, even in English, to describe sin, it's usually the antithesis of something good. Righteousness, unrighteousness. Law-abiding, lawlessness. So it's usually defined in that sense. Sin is awful because it is against God. In Psalm 51, as David reflects on his sin with Bathsheba, in Psalm 51 and verse 4, he says, "Against you," speaking of God, "against you, you only, I have sinned and done what is evil in your sight, so that you are justified when you speak and blameless when you judge." I wonder how Uriah would have felt about that statement. I wonder how Bathsheba would have felt about that statement. I wonder about what David's unborn child would have said in respect to that statement. I wonder what David's commander, who was told to send Uriah to his death, would have thought about that statement. But David is not minimizing the fact that his sin impacted other people. What he is doing is he is emphasizing the gravity of his sin. Sin was awful. His adultery, his murder of Uriah, for all intents and purposes, was awful because it was against God. That's why Paul says, "For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God." He could have said a lot about what all of us sinning has accomplished. He could have talked about the ugliness in the world. He could have talked about how we can't have the trust that we should. We can't have the relationships that we should. He could have said a lot of different things, but he says we fall short of God's glory. That was his point. That's what he chose to emphasize. For man to disobey the God of heaven proves just how awful sin is. As we read this morning in Romans chapter 5, even when we were without strength, even when we were without hope, even when we were without any possible redemption, God made a way. And he demonstrates his own love toward us in that while we were still sinners, he sent his son to die for us. Like the prodigal son, we need to cry out to God, "I have sinned against heaven." Now, you may have sinned against the person next to you. You may have sinned against your loved one. You may have sinned against your coworker or your neighbor. But you especially need to focus on restoring that relationship with God. The young man, the young prodigal son, brought grief to the very one who cared the most. How awful and ungrateful and wicked it was, and it is, for us to squander the love of God. To say, "No, thank you." When God says, "This is the best path to walk on," and we say, "No, thank you." Because that's what sin is. The first commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. God knows that no one can be happy and joyful and fulfilled and at peace without knowing and loving him supremely. That's why he tells us the most important command is to love the Lord your God. We were made for God. But until sin is removed, we cannot enjoy life to its fullest. Everything else would be meaningless. Life under the sun, Solomon said in all his wisdom, is vanity of vanities. The whole purpose of man is to fear God and keep his commandments. That's what we've been created for. We've been created to give God glory. We have been created to follow God's law. Sin's awfulness is shown in that man has to be begged to obey the gospel and be saved. You see that in the New Testament. Paul says that a lot. He says, "I beg you, I implore you to do what is right." And that's what we do too. Don't we try to keep the study going? Don't we try to keep the conversation going? Why do we have to expend so much effort for somebody to walk away from something so ugly and so heinous? The same reason somebody had to do that for us. Because as ugly and deadly and awful as sin is, it is appealing and we pursue it, even though we know not to. After all that God has done, the vast majority go their own way. Why? Because sin is deadly. Sin is awful because it is against God. Sin is also awful because it is against other people. Adultery, for example, breaks up homes. Shattered lives are an aftermath. Look at our society. Children are often involved. Stealing hurts others. Drunkenness hurts others. Greed hurts others. Lying hurts others. Many other examples could be given, but we can see that sin is awful when you look at the disastrous results that follow. Sin is against God, and that makes it awful. Sin is against others, and that's what makes it awful. And remember the second most important commandment, to love your neighbor as yourself. The third reason that sin is awful is because sin is against ourselves. We talked about that in Romans 14, verse 23. There are a lot of other passages that could be cited. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, in the context of sexual immorality, says it's a sin against oneself. Romans 1, talking about homosexuality, they receive the penalty of their error in themselves. Sin is against ourselves. And as the New Testament affirms, no one of sound mind ever hated their own self, but they care for and nurture it. No one is made better by sin. It always damages the sinner. Now, you can put lipstick on that pig, but it is still a pig. Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 27 and 28. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Or can a man walk on hot coals and his feet not be scorched? When we take fire in, we get burned. When we take sin in, it destroys. Now, we can mask it all day, we can avoid it all day, or at least try to avoid it, but it will destroy us. As the scriptures make abundantly clear, you reap what you sow. And if you sow to the wind, guess what you're going to receive? The whirlwind. Judas, after betraying Jesus, after sinning against God, and getting those pieces of silver, he never even spent the silver. He threw it back. He could not have a moment's peace. Well, he could have, but he chose not to. To continue in sin is to commit spiritual suicide. Why continue in sin when it has such an expensive price tag? The cost of your life and your soul. What will a man give in exchange for his soul? Sin is awful. Sin is awful because of its very nature, too. Any lack of conformity with God's revealed will is sin. Sin is lawlessness. Sin is also a failure to do what we know is right, and that will weigh on our conscience. Sin is missing the mark. We are free agents of choice. Sin is not merely, as we said this morning, an oops. It's not simply a mistake, it is madness to choose the exact opposite of our own well-being. And no one who rebels against God's law can survive his own self-wrought destruction. God shows that over and over again. As the wicked man sets a trap, it springs back upon him. Sin is awful for what it is, its very nature, and sin is awful for what it does. Sin, like its taskmaster, deceives. Sin promises happiness and satisfaction to allure its victims. You're feeling lonely? Sin promises a sense of belonging, a sense of appreciation when that's what we desire. When you're feeling angry, sin promises satisfaction if you just let that anger be expressed. Sin promises everything that our heart could desire, but those desires are corrupted. And its pleasures are brief. The great example of that is in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 25. It says that Moses could have enjoyed the passing pleasures of Egypt, but he chose rather to suffer trials and tribulations with God's people, looking for something better than Egypt. Sin not only deceives, it destroys. Sin will bring our spirits down to hell forever, because that's what sin does. Be sure that your sin will find you out. Sin is serious. Our society doesn't want us to think that. Our world does not want us to think that. Satan surely does not want us to think that. But God tells us time and time again that sin is an egregious offense before a holy and awesome God. Sin is serious and it needs to be dealt with. We are all sinners. That's the bad news. All of us have chosen, even when we knew what was right, we chose to do wrong. And even when we knew that we were supposed to do something good, all of us at one time or another neglected to do that. All of us at one time or another violated that innate sense of what was right, violated our conscience. All of us have chosen unrighteousness. But even when we were without strength, even when we were dead in our transgressions, God sent his only Son as the utmost expression of his love for us. We know love because he demonstrated love, and he gave his life as a ransom for many. God offers freely, by his grace, forgiveness for our sins. And in the great day of judgment, every act will be brought into judgment. But for those who have been clothed with Christ, you will be cleared of all charges. Sin is ugly and deadly, but God, through his grace, is delivering, gracious, and merciful. We can be forgiven. But if you reject his invitation to salvation, your sin will find you out. And I hope and pray that it is not after the point of no return. You are surrounded by people who can not only sympathize with your situation, but people who can empathize with your situation. Every one of us has sinned. Every one of us has fallen short. But thanks be to God that he has created the church to surround us with people of like mind who appreciate the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, his one and only Son, to save us from our sins. The gospel, the good news is that you don't have to stay in sin. You don't have to have sin as your taskmaster. It is cruel and it is destructive. Take up Christ's yoke, follow after him, because his path and his course and his way is easy. His burden is light. We are going to sing "Take My Life and Let It Be Consecrated." It's a beautiful song. It's an old song. It's a beautiful song. And I want you to think about how your life is something that can be used for God's glory as you're forgiven of your sins and as you become an agent somebody who is a participant in sanctification and an agent that shares the gospel in a broken and dying world. We're going to sing this song together, and if there's something that you want to make right, make it right. It's a free gift of salvation and deliverance. While together we stand and sing.